Hello, and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie, a show where two film professors talk about movies. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about actor Christopher Walken. Such an interesting character and such a, as a person, and also interesting backstory. He worked briefly as a lion tamer in a circus at age 15, and he attended the professional children's school. Thought he was going to, you know, study dance, and then kind of wanders into acting. And he's such a very distinctive actor. Nervous looking is one of the first descriptions I read about him. And I thought, yeah, that really kind of encapsulates the nervous energy that he has, that he brings to all of his roles. So I'm sure you have some anecdotes about Christopher Walken. So why don't we start there, Mike?
I've actually met Christopher Walken, and when you mentioned that nervous quality, that edgy quality, it's definitely there. And where it was quite striking for me was I was at the Telluride Film Festival, which is way up in the mountains in Colorado. And the reason I mention that is it's one of those film festivals where it's a boutique festival, relatively small, very casual in a lot of ways. And the reason I mention that in particular is people are casually dressed, and whether you're just a moviegoer or one of the visiting celebrities, it's, you know, blue jeans, flannel shirt, t-shirt, whatever. It's a very casual kind of ambiance there, except for Christopher Walken, the year he was there. He was dressed like he was going to a nightclub in Manhattan at 2 o'clock in the morning or something. He was all in black and, you know, almost funereal looking, everything black. And the contrast between his pale white skin, in fact, he has quotes in some of his interviews where he says he has skin that has not seen the light of day. And so he's got that really pale skin, really black outfit. What a sharp contrast, that nervous, edgy, kind of angst-ridden look on the face. And you think this, you know, you almost want to cross the other side of the street. I mean, I didn't do that, but there's that sense to him. And he was there actually with a movie called The Comfort of Strangers, which we can talk about, from 1990. But the fact that he has that image, and yet there are real discrepancies between that image and his origins, and in many ways, even like his personality. I mean, it's just what he became known for that, and he plays it really well, but he has enough range as an actor that he's done other things as well. But Marie, I want to dovetail and go back to your opening remarks about Chris Walken, in the sense that, and what I'm saying in short form is he was a lot friendlier than I expected based on the initial look-see, if you will. You know, we spent some time at a party even. I mean, it was fun to be around. But back to your comment, he grows up in New York and very much interested in song and dance. This is one of the surprising elements for some people. He's not just, you know, thinking about dance lessons, he's doing it. He's on Broadway at the age of 16. He tours nationally in West Side Story. You don't typically tend to think of Chris Walken, you know, as a song and dance man. And yet there are several roles, and we can double back on this in a little while, where he does some, you know, singing, dancing, soft shoe, if you will. And so he actually has that strong theater background. And periodically he has returned to theater and to musical theater. And so then when you actually get deeper into the career in various ways, you realize Chris Walken really is a much more versatile actor than he's sometimes given credit for. He can play the villain. He can really, you know, be scary, that kind of edginess, that kind of anxiety, if you will. But he also has a, you know, a charming quality and a song and dance background. And sometimes he's tapped into that actually on screen. And just, you know, likewise, occasionally returning to the theater. I mean, you know, so again, there's a bit more range and a bit more versatility than that sort of nervous, villainous character that he does play so well.
I love that you say tap in, because, you know, it gives a little dance reference there. He does try to sneak a dance into every movie, whether it's scripted or not. And I don't know when you want to jump in to talk about that, Mike. In fact, I'm not sure. He's got so many interesting roles that I'm sure you want to discuss. I know we're going to talk about The Deer Hunter, because how can we not? I just want to mention about when he starts getting famous. He says he was already 35 years old and he'd been in show business for 30 plus years. And suddenly there was this big movie and I was getting an Oscar, and this enormous thing happened in Annie Hall in 1977. I played the strange brother who wanted to drive into oncoming cars. Immediately after that was The Deer Hunter in 1978, where I played this nice guy who shoots himself in the head. Something happened there. The fact that they came so close together and they were both important movies, two big public things where I was simultaneously disturbed that got the ball rolling for me in terms of being an actor.
Yeah, I want to linger in this period because for me, it's when Chris Walken really establishes himself, the image he has, and when I really become aware of him. When I look at his earlier credits, these are mostly small roles and, you know, he's not particularly making a big impression. But then in the mid-70s, he starts to. A film called Next Stop, Greenwich Village in 1976, Roseland, 1977. He's starting to, you know, be on screen a bit more. But for me, my all-time favorite Chris Walken performance is still in Annie Hall in 1977. It's essentially a cameo. You know, when you think about the character setup of, you know, Woody Allen's character, Alvy Singer, very much a New Yorker, Diane Keaton, you know, very much a Midwestern girl. And you know, as Annie Hall, the wholesomeness, the naivete, the kind of, you know, almost clueless personality, at least from Alvy Singer's perspective. And when she invites him home to her parents' house, you know, to have Easter dinner. Well, of course, you know, they serve him a big Easter ham, and her grandmother at the table is so anti-Semitic that she sees him as a Hasidic Jew at the table, a great visual gag there. And who's at the table? Well, Annie Hall's brother, Dwayne, who, you know, again, Chris Walken's only in two scenes in this film. There's the dinner table scene where he really doesn't do much other than eat the meal as people talk back and forth across the table. But then immediately after dinner, there's the landmark scene. It just lasts a minute or two, but it's indelible. And what I actually wanted to do was read his monologue as Dwayne, because it's absolutely the moment when you get Chris Walken as creepy Chris Walken. Something's unhinged inside this guy, this pale skin, almost alien looking creature. So anyway, to set the scene there, they've had Easter dinner, and Alvy has to compliment, you know, saying dynamite ham, you know. And so anyway, then up in Dwayne's bedroom, the lighting is atmospheric, just some light across his face as he sits in bed. Alvy Singer, the Woody Allen character, sort of at the edge of the frame, very close to the door, like he wants to make an escape. And Dwayne is sitting on the bed and he makes his confession. And actually, this is how he puts it. Can I confess something? I tell you this as an artist. I think you'll understand. Sometimes when I'm driving on the road at night, I see two headlights coming toward me fast. I have this sudden impulse to turn the wheel quickly, head on into the oncoming car. I can anticipate the explosion, the sound of shattering glass, the flames rising out of the flowing gasoline. And there's a very awkward moment where there's a pause, complete silence. Alvy Singer coughs, clears his throat. And then Alvy says, well, I have to go now, Dwayne, because I'm due back on the planet Earth. And that was the moment when everyone, I mean, Annie Hall was a huge critical and commercial hit. And everyone who talked about or wrote about that film almost always would mention, what about her brother, Dwayne, and this guy who plays him? It was indelible, right? It really was such a great little bit there. And always, I think, one of the highlights of Chris Walken's career. But Marie, to your point, you're absolutely right that, you know, he does that in 1977, just that minute or two on screen. And then in 1978, he makes The Deer Hunter and he wins the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. So he really has landed at this point. And when you think about, again, that edgy, dangerous quality, I mean, you know, the performance, what we're talking about essentially here in terms of the dynamics of the storyline involved that game of Russian roulette with a gun. I mean, what could be edgier, more nervousness than that? I mean, you know, to have a gun and like, you know, is it going to go off? The cylinder going around. Yeah, we're all sweating bullets. Sorry to do that, but we're all sweating bullets during a Russian roulette game. And, you know, who better than Chris Walken to be involved with that kind of a storyline? So he really does, I think, between Annie, it is like a 1-2 punch, you're right, between Annie Hall and getting noticed there, and then The Deer Hunter, where he is, you know, one of the essential characters, that's the breakthrough right there.
And you get that sort of morbid weirdness from him in both of those roles, which I think sort of set him up for later. Speaking of that Russian roulette scene, he says he was remembering being sent to summer camp by his parents, which he hated. He felt betrayed, ostracized, alone, which he felt the character was experiencing at that point in the film. What's interesting about that scene, because that's what everybody remembers from The Deer Hunter, which, by the way, if you haven't seen it, it's a Vietnam movie, kind of an art house film. That's how it felt to me. A whole lot of people in it that you know, Robert De Niro, Meryl Streep. And it's about the lives of people in a small industrial town and how the war in Vietnam affects their lives. But in that seminal scene with the Russian roulette, I mean, Chris Walken doesn't like guns. He says he doesn't even like holding them. And if he has to hold a gun in a scene, he wants to get it out of his hands as quick as possible. He says he'd make a bad killer in real life because he doesn't even like to pick them up. So the fact that, you know, he managed to do that scene and it's so iconic, you know, you have to get past your own feelings about what they're asking you to do in the scene in order to make it work. Anything else you want to say about the Deer Hunter before we talk about maybe some of his other roles?
Well, I want to talk about it again, as I mentioned earlier, the role itself, but as a springboard to a big commercial career. Because when you think about it, with his personality type, or at least what he played on screen, you know, he has those options of like trying to really go Hollywood or playing more of the independent film route, or even like in terms of theater, you know, should it be Broadway or more off Broadway and so on, more cutting edge. He's been able to have a kind of balancing act with things like that. In the 1980s, he makes a lot of movies, and a lot of them are really commercial features, like, you know, Dogs of War and Brainstorm and Dead Zone, View to a Kill, At Close Range, Biloxi Blues, Milagro Beanfield War. I mean, I'm just reading titles here, but just to give a sense of how, like, in that decade, that's coming off of The Deer Hunter. You know what I mean? He's got an Academy Award. He's a known actor. And they're pretty good films for the most part. And he, you know, he's playing a range of characters, tends to play the villains. But you notice that he also, there's the Song and Dance Man who's still there and periodically pops up, Pennies from Heaven in 1981. I mean, you again have reminders of how he's got that, what I always like to call it, a soft shoe background. It's just like, give him a chance and he'll want to do a song and dance. And so that leads up really by the late 80s, early 90s. The film where I met him was The Comfort of Strangers in 1990, kind of a high-end art house film with some commercial crossover. Paul Schrader is the director. It's based on an Ian McEwan novel with a script by Harold Pinter. This is all top-notch talent. A cast including Natasha Richardson and Rupert Everett and Helen Mirren. I'm actually, you know, not the biggest fan of the film. It's a great looking film. It's a great looking art film. I don't think the film is as profound as it thinks it is, but what a nice surface. By nice, I mean, just, you know, indulge the senses. Just, it's beautiful to watch and just so lush and so well acted. And that's where you get a sense of how Chris Walken can hold his own with anyone. He, in fact, his character is married to the Helen Mirren character. And, you know, they play off each other extremely well. And with the cast being what it is, he holds his own with any actor there. So that's, for our purposes in this episode, I would stress that, you know, as an actor, he can hold his own with, you know, a Helen Mirren or you know, Tasha Richardson or Rupert Everett, any of them. Now, in that same year, actually, he makes another film. And that's a really disturbing mystery story, Comfort of Strangers, a kind of existential mystery story. So there is a lot of menace in it. It does have that edge to it, but it's atmospheric. It's just kind of soaking in or indulging in that atmosphere. But that same year, he makes a film called King of New York for Abel Ferrara, which is just flat out, you know, exploitation, if you will. Ferrara loves to do that. He's known for films like Ms. 45, you know, sort of like the bottom half of a double bill or a drive-in feature or grindhouse feature or whatever. And it's that kind of a film. The reason I mention it, and there's some good actors in it like Wesley Snipes and Lawrence Fishburne and so on. But for our purposes, the reason I mention it is that in King of New York, Chris Walken plays a drug kingpin. He's really good at a bad character. You know, this is a guy who does and says really nasty stuff, but he has a kind of calmness to him. Maybe that's something, Marie, you and I could talk about a bit more. Even though these are violent films, like King of New York, violent films, a lot of murder and mayhem and you know, profane dialogue and all that, the works. Sometimes what makes the central villain so compelling is the fact he doesn't have to always shout. Sometimes he just gives you a look. You know, you have the black outfit, if you will, and the pale white face, and he just, you know, sits behind a desk and he just kind of does one of these numbers on you. That'll have you flipping out because you wonder, like what's going on inside, or when is this guy going to explode? And he will explode occasionally, but it's that kind of calmness, if you will, with the storm all around him.
That's a great way to point it out, because he is kind of calm. You can see that there may be some seething rage going on under there, but it's not going to come out unless he wants it to. And he says that most of his jobs that he gets are playing very unwholesome people, which is a great way of putting it. There's always something wrong with a guy, and sometimes something deeply wrong. He says, I'm tired of that. I tell my agent, I want a Fred McMurray part. I want a part where I have a wife and kids and a dog and a house. And my kids say to me, what do you think I should do, Dad? And I say, be careful. Now, I think that's funny because he does kind of do a role like that in the movie Blast from the Past, which I absolutely love him in. And there's a fantastic little moment where, because he plays this man who's very, very intelligent, but, you know, sort of a little odd. It's a perfect Christopher Walken vehicle, but it has a little essential sweetness to it that you kind of get with a lot of Christopher Walken as well. And there's this one scene where, you know, they're living in a bomb shelter because they think that, you know, the nuclear bomb has gone off. And as the young child who's played by Brendan Fraser as an adult grows up, you know, they're teaching him things like what stocks are and what, you know, how to learn different languages and stuff. And there's a really nice scene where he's showing his son, you know, they teach him how to dance, and he, you know, sashays over to cut in, you know, so he understands, you know, the social, how people, you know, get together and what you do on dates and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that little dance sequence is really nice. And so is the one that he does with Sissy Spacek when, you know, the bolts have been removed and that they're now able to go back up. So Blast from the Past is an absolutely great, great Christopher Walken movie. And so is Pennies from Heaven. And you won't get to the scene until almost the very end, but Pennies from Heaven is a wonderful musical with Bernadette Peters and Steve Martin. And at the end, you do get Christopher Walken doing this wonderful soft shoe, like you said, Mike. And then it becomes a striptease, and it gets all the way down to some boxer shorts and a wife beater, and he peels off the wife beater. It's just absolutely golden dance. And you see, wow, he is really very, very talented. He could have done that instead of all the roles that he did do. By the way, one of the things he did not end up doing, and I want to know what you think of this, is apparently he was considered as Han Solo. And since it's really hard to imagine anybody but Harrison Ford doing it, how do you think Christopher Walken could have added something to that role, Mike, if anything?
Well, you know, the character would have become even more disturbing or more of a loner, if you will. There would have certainly been more of a solo quality, if you will. So I think he could have made it work, but I think it would have given it an even more, I don't want to say ominous, but a more internalized, you know, loner type quality. But I want to quickly jump back to the song and dance quality again, the soft shoe quality, because there's yet another example that should be mentioned here. In 2007, Hairspray came out. This was the film version of the Broadway musical version, I guess long-winded, John Waters' 1988 comedy. So in the 2007 version of Hairspray, the musical version based on the Broadway hit, Edna Turnblad is played by John Travolta, of course, you know, in drag. And Edna's husband, Wilbur, is played by Chris Walken. And, you know, in that film, they have a really lovely duet together called A Timeless to Me. So you really get a chance not just to see Chris Walken doing soft shoe, but Chris Walken and John Travolta, you know, as a married couple dancing together. And he's really, really, you know, delightful in something like that. And that's a case where I think enough audiences do realize that he's got that side to him. So, you know, he can play a villain, but goodness knows he's not a villain in Hairspray. Just the opposite. He's a softie, and he does a soft shoe extremely well. I wanted to mention some of the films, you know, leading up to that, as you get into the 21st century, ways in which he's able to play villains, but or bad guys, if you will, but he can bring a lighter touch to that. Catch Me If You Can from 2002, the Steven Spielberg film. I mean, the star of that really is Leonardo DiCaprio and, you know, what that character is all about. But in Catch Me If You Can, Chris Walken plays that character's father, who himself is a two-bit con artist. So in effect, like, where, you know, the apple didn't fall very far from the tree kind of thing. You know, how did, you know, the young DiCaprio character become a con artist? Well, look at his dad. And Chris Walken does it with such ease and such charm that, yeah, strictly speaking, he's a criminal, but he's a two-bit con artist. Just kind of like trying to make a go of it. And Walken was so effective with that, he received an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. So people realize that, you know, it's not just a matter of, like, you know, when he's playing really bad, really heavy, or when he's playing something lighter. There's that in between where you're playing someone who, technically speaking, is a bad guy, or, you know, has a criminal record. But there's a lighthearted quality, which we wouldn't always necessarily associate with Chris Walken. He's not really nervous or edgy or dangerous in that film. What do you think of that, Marie? Because I think he's able also to show a lighter side.
Well, I think he is good at showing a lighter side when you least expect it. I mean, and I wanted to mention before we don't get to talk about it at all, that he has been on Saturday Night Live several times, so many times. He actually has a standing invitation to host whenever he wants to. And one of the most iconic and popular skits of all time is Christopher Walken doing this skit called More Cowbell, where they are pretending they are recording Blue Oyster Cult's classic song, Don't Fear the Reaper. And Will Ferrell plays this guy, fictitious guy in the band who plays cowbell. Christopher Walken plays legendary producer who comes in to record. So no matter what they do, no matter how much cowbell there is, he always needs more cowbell. And that is the slug line that keeps getting repeated. I gotta have more cowbell. And it's so perfect for Christopher Walken because, yeah, he's supposed to play this very serious, very famous producer. And yet when he gets down to, you know, the killer line of, I gotta have more cowbell, his timing is just so spot on. He is just so incredibly good at it. So if you've never seen any Chris Walken, and by the way, he doesn't like to be called Christopher apparently because it sounds like a sneeze, you definitely go to YouTube and check out More Cowbell. Have you seen that skit, Mike?
Yeah, I have. And I love, though, what you were just mentioning about his timing. That's something we haven't really discussed to this point. It's not just, you know, the way the characters are written and physically how he fills out those roles, but his line readings, his deliveries. Because oftentimes there is the calmness we talked about. You know, he's just looking you down. He's staring you down and so calm that it's kind of unnerving, right? It's kind of creepy in a way. What's going on inside sort of thing. And then as an actor, he knows how to handle the timing. Like where you almost count off, right? Like 1,000, 2,000, like, you know, counting off and then the line will come out. Oftentimes sotto voce, you know, underplaying, understated. He doesn't have to shout. Sometimes it's more effective when you actually keep the voice down. But then that intense look. And again, I think a lot of that goes, I mean, film actors have it, but I think for in his case, a lot of it goes back to the stage background. He knows how to really work with a script there in terms. And when earlier I gave his monologue from Annie Hall, the timing there, I mean, his is a lot better than mine, I'll tell you, but the timing there, like he sometimes will break, not between sentences, but within sentences. And there'll be that second or two before he goes to the next word. A second or two there can feel like 5 minutes, can it? You know, you're like, oh, you're sitting there, what's this guy gonna say next? You know, he's so unhinged, what's he gonna say next? But that's where you don't just read it straight. I mean, I read it straight through, but where you know where to break it in a way that, you know, psychologically is really effective. In the case of the Annie Hall monologue, really creepy, really scary, actually, the suicidal brother, you know, Dwayne. I mean, you know, what her brother Dwayne is going to say, and then goodness knows what he'll do. Because after that, he actually isn't a third scene very briefly. I said just two scenes. It's actually a third scene briefly right after that, where they're behind the wheel of the car and Dwayne is driving them to the airport. And it's entirely visual and it only lasts a few seconds, but the camera pans across. So the first scene is at the Easter dinner table. The second one is Dwayne's bedroom. The third one is in that car where the camera goes across. There's rain on the windshield. The wiper's going back and forth. And the look on Woody Allen's face there, because Dwayne's been talking about suicide and now he's the one driving them to the airport in the rain. Is he going to turn the wheel into the oncoming traffic? It's just a great, great visual gag. And again, how much you can do with the physicality of it. And you know, Walken has that, just simply the way he presents his face to the camera.
You know, speaking of great monologues, he has one in Pulp Fiction. I mean, you mentioned John Travolta briefly, but Christopher Walken was in Pulp Fiction in 1994. And he has this famous monologue, which he said he would memorize. He said he had to spend hours trying to memorize it because every time he finished saying it, he would crack up and then you have to, you know, figure out how to backtrack and fix it. There was another thing that I wanted to mention about him in terms of his roles, because he says that, you know, he's been married forever to the same woman. He says, but I never am in the movie where I get the girl. He said, which is really weird because in real life, I did get the girl. I think that's a nice way to, you know, think about that. Like why, since he says he's always playing himself, the fact that he doesn't actually play himself in a realistic way, I think is really kind of telling.
It is. I mean, he's more normal in his real life. I mean, you know, he and his wife have been married for decades. That's unusual in show business. And he's really a normal, much more easygoing guy in his private life. But because he got cast as villains and does it so well, he realizes that he's never going to get the parts or almost never get the parts where he's able to, like, you know, meet the girl, fall in love, you know, have a happy ending that way. He's not going to get that kind of a role, even though Marie, as you say, ironically, in his private life, that's what he got. He
yep.
got the girl.
Yep. So sometimes art imitates life and sometimes it does not. There's also an interesting conversation he had with somebody where he mentioned that as a child, somebody said to him, you know, you've got a lot of nerve. And he took it as advice. Like he said, maybe everybody should be told that they have a lot of nerve, because then, you know, maybe you try things that otherwise you would be too afraid to. So he saw it as a challenge. And given that we started off by talking about how nervous looking he was, I thought I would close with that particular anecdote, which brings us to the end of our show almost. Want to make sure you know about our upcoming film discussions for spring semester, which will be Friday nights at 7 o'clock. And you can see the whole lineup on howardcc.edu/filmfestivals. Also, be sure to check out our other podcasts on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And we will see you at the movies.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.